Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Admiral Paul Zeecompt, 25th Commandant of the U.S. Coast Guard. Also joining our conversation from IBM is Don Fenhagen. Admiral, the Coast Guard is defined by its missions, its people, and its tradition. As Commandant, you've outlined a strategic direction for the Coast Guard that honors these elements and fosters its motto, Semper Paratus, Always Ready. Would you give us an overview of your Commandant's direction and the guiding principles that frame this direction?
Well, it's very simplistic. There's three key tenets to it. And the first thing we did before – I rolled this out the first day I took over as Commandant, by the way. But before we did, we farmed it out to our junior-most enlisted people and said, hey, do you understand this? And the first thing they said, well, where's the part of – we're going to reorganize the entire Coast Guard. Where's the part where we're going to take the Coast Guard in a direction that we've never gone in before? Because what it really speaks to our people, this is about consistency and about predictability. And so the first part is about service to nation. Part of that is a fundamental principle of, we serve our nation before we serve ourselves and wherever we're called to serve. But then you start breaking it down where, talk about intelligence will drive our operations. Mm-hmm. Because in the past, we would just do a lot of activity, mm-hmm. not informed activity, and maybe not the best use of our resources. So intelligence driving operations means we're going to do more activity, more operations, in fact, that have measurable outcomes in some areas at the expense of doing less in others. An example is in the counter-drug mission. We have more planes, more ships doing that mission than probably we've ever had before. Is that because we have more ships and planes? No, we have the same number we had 3 years ago, but we're doing less things elsewhere mm-hmm. because this is where the greatest threat is to the United States, as validated by the national intelligence community. We want to make sure we're aligned with the Department of Homeland Security. And initially, when DHS rolled out its first QHSR, it was really hard to find the Coast Guard in there. Okay. And that is not a good place to be if you are not aligned with your with the third largest department in federal government. So that's service to nation. The second tenet is about duty to people. The first part of that is, we need to get sexual assault out of our service. And this is all about, we have victims that feel betrayed that a member of the Coast Guard violated their trust through this aberrant activity. We're making great progress. Our number of reports are way down, recognizing not everyone reports. We're moving in the right direction, but we still had 218 reports in the last year. We lose about 50% different subject on duty to people. We're losing about 50% of our women 10 years into their service in the Coast Guard. At a point in time where we're the most diverse our Coast Guard Academy has ever been. Diversity and inclusiveness is a big part of duty to people. So today, the class of 2018 and 19 are about 40% women, 33% underrepresented minorities, moving in a good direction there, but we still have more work to do on retention. When I ask people, what causes you to leave the Coast Guard? And sometimes it's the frequent moves, the dual careers, raising a family, and you can't do all of those things and have a military career. So we're minimizing the number of moves people make. If you're in an area where there are a lot of Coast Guard installations, it's quite possible you could do 5-6 assignments in that same geographic area over a period of 10-15 years and never have to move your family. That's a good thing. It's common sense. It's good for our family. It's good for readiness. And it saves us a lot of money. The third tenet is about committing to excellence. Gone are the days where we could be a Swiss Army knife, a jack of all trades, master of some. You do not do neurosurgery with a Swiss Army knife. But when I look at the work we're doing in intel and cyber, our marine inspection programs, very technical in nature, and you can't just have journeymen doing this type of work. You've got to grow the specialties to be able to excel in those areas. And the other is we need to demonstrate to the government that we are a good steward of public dollars. A key part of that is assuring that we can open our books and provide a clean financial audit opinion. And we've done so 3 consecutive years now, the only military service that can make that statement.
That's a good statement to make. So, sir, could you give us a sense of your strategic intent as a follow-up and some of your key strategic priorities that ensure that the Coast Guard is ready for today but prepared more for tomorrow?
So when we put our strategic intent together, it's much like the QDR, the Quadrennial Defense Review, is first taking a fix on what is the external environment. And let's face it, tranquility is not exactly breaking out across the world. But I start looking at, so what equities does the Coast Guard have against Daesh? They have not moved into the maritime realm. And so that is very much, as I look at the Navy missions, the maritime missions, probably not a big role for the Coast Guard when we look at terrorism, especially in the Mideast. When we look at Russia and what's happening in the Ukraine, is there a lot of Coast Guard equity there? It's really a land-based operation. So we went through all of that and started looking at our four big strategies. The Arctic, we have a cruise ship that will ply those waters this year, the Crystal Serenity. At a point in time where I have a C-130 in Greenland today doing the international ice patrol since the sinking of the Titanic back in 1912. So what if we have a cruise ship that sinks in the Arctic? We better be ready for that. We're seeing the growth of COCA with the peace accords, with the FARC still in deliberation. But COCA production, COCA cocaine consumption is up. Drug deaths are up in this country, and that trend is not moving in the right direction as well. So equally relevant there. Over 60,000 offshore oil workers were laid off as oil prices came down. Will they remain depressed over a long period of time? Clearly not. But as they recover, who goes back out and who does that work? And is it inexperienced work crews that may lead to another deep water horizon type event when we look at the energy sector? The Panama Canal is opening. It hasn't opened yet. It was supposed to open on April 1st. But when it does, it might change some of the trade routes. And where do we need to be repositioned if we're going to see increases in volume in some ports, less in others as well? And then the other, cyber, that is going to continue to evolve. And we need to make sure we're shooting ahead of that target and not behind based on the most recent intrusion, if you will, when it comes to cyber. So all of those external factors, not to mention a change in administration, what new policies might we look to? What is our policy going forward with Cuba and a number of others? That's the external environment. And then where do our Coast Guard authorities? We have 61 international treaties from drugs to fish to weapons of mass destruction. Where does the Coast Guard best fit in that 21st century world, which in part justifies why you need to recapitalize. But the key part in all of that is how do you manage talent in the 21st century as well? We've never used the word talent management, and I actually spent time in Silicon Valley earlier this year to understand their human resource capital strategy. How do they manage talent in a world and under Moore's law that changes literally overnight, where what you may know today will be obsolete 2 years from now? So how do we stay in touch with that? So as we looked at that, we would always have fiscal policy drive our strategies and say, you're going to have this much money. What do you want to do with it? Mm-hmm. The purpose of the strategic intent is to understand the external environment, what it will take to answer all of those calls. And if you don't get all the funding, then how do you manage risk across the competing challenges that we see in the 21st century? So a little bit different approach. Yeah. Of how we would always have budget-driving strategy. How do we have strategy-drive budget instead?
You recognize the Western Hemisphere as a primary operating area for the Coast Guard. I'd like to explore a little your Western Hemisphere strategy. What are the key elements of the strategy? What are you specifically doing to disrupt the maritime traffic and activities of transnational criminal networks? Perhaps you can also highlight some of the successes in this area. I know you have a few.
Sure, Don. Maybe I'll start with my role as the chairman of the Interdiction Committee. I've made two trips. What I brought are a number of principles from Department of Defense, Department of State, Department of Justice, DEA, among others, to visit with each of the presidents in Central America, to meet with the senior leadership in Colombia, to see firsthand the challenges that they are seeing. So I recall meeting with President Cerrone in El Salvador last November. There's a lot of gang violence taking place there right now. But the reason you see unaccompanied minors arriving at our southwest border is they are fleeing from crime-ridden countries. The most violent countries in the world are right here in our backyard. Not widely appreciated, but that is the fact of the matter. It was no different when I met with President Hernandez in Honduras. And I said, what does he attribute all the violent crime to? At that point, Honduras was the number one crime-ridden country in the world, worse than Iraq at the height of the insurgency. And he said, well, we lose the battle when drugs come ashore. And the way drugs are shipped in bulk, they typically land in Central America, at which point they're broken down to retail size. law enforcement, elected officials, a lot of corruption comes with this. Rule of law goes out the window. Violent crime goes up. But he said, if you can stop those drugs from landing, you know, it gives our security environment an opportunity to recover and ultimately rebuild our economic base and build trust in foreign investments so people will invest. Because right now, it's not only the most crime-ridden countries, you're looking at 40% unemployment, 50% poverty, poverty being defined at $2 per day earnings. And so where are those countries going to be in the next 15, 20 years if we elect to do nothing? And so a do-nothing approach really doesn't resonate. But we often looked at drug flow strictly of how many bales, how many tons of cocaine did you remove? And we never addressed it from a regional stability and what is the social cost, to include the social cost here in the United States, where you know, drug deaths have exceeded highway fatalities now for several years running. But it is a multi-billion dollar industry. And then we look at the conversions of drug flow and is that aiding and abetting other such as terrorist activity as well. And we keep a close eye on that. So Western Hemisphere focused a lot on that. It's focused on illegal migration. Right now we're off to a record year of number of Cuban migrants that we've apprehended trying to make the crossing. The good news is very few, if any, loss of life, but we're seeing much more desperate acts by using our wet foot, dry foot policy, do whatever it takes to get into the United States. And if we apprehend a boat, we've had several migrants shoot themselves. The gun disappears, but we have to medevac them to a U.S. hospital. Some will cut themselves. We had one swallow bleach, and they'll go to those levels of desperation. So you start looking at, well, you know, what is the policy in Cuba? If people are that desperate to come to the United States, we can infer that Cuba is still not a country that abides by human rights accords. And this will be a challenge. So it's a challenge there. But if we do nothing in the rest of Central America, all the drivers are now set into motion for those countries to continue to be pulls to this country for illegal migration as well. So all of that is wrapped up into our Western Hemisphere strategy.
So, Admiral, what are you doing to enhance the southern maritime border security?
It really comes down to intelligence and working across the interagency. Mm-hmm. And within DHS, it's within our Immigration and Customs Enforcement, Customs and Border Protection, and Coast Guard have really been the triad for the Department of Homeland Security from investigative work, surveillance, and ultimately interdiction. We work hand in glove with the Joint Interagency Task Force South. And then under Secretary Johnson, we've created three task forces, a joint task force east, west, and one exclusively for investigations. East looks at maritime. Joint task force west looks at our southwest border, our port, land ports of entry. And investigations looks for not the mules, if you will, but the organizers, the kingpins of human trafficking, drug trafficking, because many times the people we interdict are the third tier. How do we back that person up to the second tier, and then how do we back that up to uproot the organizers of this illicit activity? So this is the first time where you've seen the Department of Homeland Security, in the absence of Goldwater Nichols, really have a unified approach to dealing with some of the threats on our south border, maritime and land.
The prosperity of this country is inextricably linked to a safe and efficient maritime transportation system, which demands robust safety and security regimes. I think just as your brothers and sisters in TSA and CBP are seeing increased passenger traffic right now, you're seeing a great deal of increased maritime commerce. What's being done to address some of these increasing maritime commerce concerns?
Again, this is not something the Coast Guard can do on its own, and it really resonates with our authorities that we have at the captain of the port level, you know, at our 37 sectors that we have throughout the Coast Guard. Consistent across all of these sectors is that we have what we call an area maritime security committee that brings in private, public sector, addressing maritime threats and then addressing what I would say incremental security measures in the presence of an imminent threat. If I go back to 9/11, we were doing activity everywhere. We created this term called sea marshals, mm-hmm. and to replicate the air marshal program. But we were doing it in an intelligence vacuum where there were no really known threats. Working with CBP, we have a national targeting center that looks at every ship arrival, you know, from passenger to cargo manifest, screening that cargo, where was it loaded, where was it shipped, who are the crew members, where we can use a threat-based approach of does a vessel pose a potential threat to the United States. We have a program where we send audit teams out and we audit every port with whom the United States does maritime trade. There's several that are not in compliance with the International Port Security Code. And so if a ship calls on a non-compliant port within five times of calling on a port in the United States, they will be subjected to a rather rigorous port security inspection regime. The shippers want to avoid that because time is money. And so what it does is they will avoid those ports that are non-compliant, which then forces those ports to become compliant without any regulatory arm, but it's really driven by global trade. And so it's really been probably a best practice of how do we incentivize other ports to be compliant with what are international standards that we have adopted under the Maritime Transportation Security Act, but they're consistent with global regulations as well.
So, Admiral, what's the current Coast Guard position in the Arctic, and what are some of the challenges you face in that area? And perhaps this is an opportunity to maybe go over your Arctic strategy.
Well, obviously, the biggest challenge has been just a matter of capacity. Our nation has one heavy icebreaker that is about 40 years old. Mm-hmm. For this year and next, we chair the Arctic Forum, led by the 24th Commandant, my predecessor, Admiral Bob Papp, who is our envoy to the Arctic Council. Last fall, we created for the first time an Arctic Coast Guard Forum. Working through the Department of State, I was allowed to bring my counterpart at the four-star level to New London, Connecticut, where we signed the first statement to create what is a Coast Guard Forum. Russia, as you know, has 41 icebreakers. We have one medium and one heavy icebreaker in our nation's inventory, and a GDP nearly nine times that of Russia. We often say, well, we can't afford it. Well, we had not made it a priority. We do have a mark in our 17 budget that gets us out of the starting blocks, to start recapitalizing this capability. You have to ask yourself, well, do we want the Arctic to be, the next battlefield, or do we want the Arctic to really focus on the amount of human activity, whether it's oil exploration, fisheries, safety of life at sea, protecting the way of life of the indigenous tribes, and actually protecting that pristine environment? Those are all worthy issues that all eight Arctic Council nations are in violent and agreement. These are the areas that we need to be focused upon. And the fact that you can have regular and deliberate conversations with all eight nations and walk away from, let's not start building offensive capabilities in the Arctic. Let's really focus on areas that we can come together and agree upon. At a point in time where, we look at Russia with a wary eye right now, especially with the leadership that's in place in Russia. But at least this is one area where we can all come to the table and discuss these most relevant issues as it pertains to the Arctic.
How is the U.S. Coast Guard recapitalizing its critical assets and infrastructure? We will ask Admiral Paul Zeekoft, Commandant of the U.S. Coast Guard, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.